My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to a new episode of the show. Today, I've got a fun question. It's a kind of a newer question I've started asking some of my guests, and it lets us kind of branch out and tell a story and just kind of like chase that nostalgia feeling, which is essentially what the whole podcast is, really. I think it fits in line with it perfectly. But we talk about some of our favorite consoles, but not just picking our favorite console, but just tell us that console story. So when did you get it? You know, what did you love about it? What were some special moments that you had? What are some of those essential games that you personally enjoy and love? But just, yeah, what is that story you have for that console? So my two guests are my first-time guest, John from the Game Deflators. He'll introduce himself on the first segment. I will also have him again on future episodes. I've done his podcast as well in the past. You can check that out. I'll have the links for his details and his stuff in the show notes below. So be sure to follow along with his stuff as well if you like what you hear from him. And then on the second segment, on the back half of the show, is my good buddy Austin. So he's back to the show. He's been on a number of times, and he'll continue to be on a number of times again in the future. It's always good talking with him. We always have a great time kind of chatting and being nostalgic with these things. The other thing, just up front from the business side of things, I do have that Patreon page launched. You do have access to following along for free content. I have the information in the show notes below as well, so you can read more about it and check it out there. But you can click a follow for free button. It does not cost you a thing. I'm not trying to sell you anything on there. It's literally just where I can share some of my game writing and some of my other creative outlets, some of the like behind the scenes stuff from like the books that I'm working on. But I've got a lot of cool stuff there. There are options to like contribute monthly, like $3 or $6 a month. What that does is gives you like a bonus show. I did release that into the feed. So if you are coming back to here weekly and you're new on Friday, you'll see that there was a bonus episode on Wednesday I released into the main feed. That's a show called Single Player that I do for Patreon followers and listeners. It's just kind of more video game talk. Those are always, you know, different topics and different content, and not anything with a guest or any like structured things. I do just kind of fun different breakdowns each week. And kind of playing around and having something new. It's just a bonus show, kind of a companion to this if you like it. And you can get that for those paid tiers, either the $3 or $6 option on Patreon. But again, I highly encourage y'all, if you are liking the show, to just do the free follow on Patreon, because you can see a lot more about all the stuff that I'm doing, and I'll announce new projects and new stuff there. It's also where I'm able to keep my 32-bit library books for sale, like digitally. Like they're like linked there as well, too. So it makes it all nice and organized and easy. So that's enough of the business stuff up front. Appreciate y'all. And thank you for continuing to listen. And we'll hopefully hear you back next week. Bye. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. No, I say welcome back. And no, I'm breaking the timeline. I'm breaking the mystery. Welcome to the show. I have a first-time guest who we did not just previously record a segment with and are going to release it in reverse order at all. This is not a thing that's happening. This is, the magic is still real, folks. Welcome to the show, John. You are coming to us from your own podcast, The Game Deflators, and this is your first time on the show. So before we jump into the icebreaker, how about you give us a little bit of a rundown of what you do, how you do it, and take the time to just kind of plug your stuff and, you know, any of
folks who kind of like have overlap and want to check you all out, you know, like this will be the reason to check you out. So yeah, introduce yourself and let us know, John.
Cool. Thanks for getting me on, Darren. Definitely appreciate it. So yeah, Game Deflators, we are a gaming podcast. We focus on, of course, video games, but we dive into the world of Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons. We talk Lego, pretty much anything that's tied to nerdy objects that are out in the market. We do cover a lot of things that are tied to the overall industry of gaming and really those other areas as well. So you can find the Game Deflators podcast on thegamedeflators.com, our currently out-of-date website. You can also find us on Twitter, at Game Deflators, and then on Facebook, Threads, and Instagram, at The Game Deflators. We're also on YouTube, so you can check out some playthroughs, things of that nature. And then we are a podcast, so we're on all the major podcast applications and lesser-known podcast apps. So, of course, you can find us on there. Like, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff.
Rad. And you will, you mentioned this before to me, but you're going to be getting into like the video space and doing like YouTube content and stuff as well.
Yeah. So coming to you in the past, not on that prior recorded episode.
Yes.
So yeah, we are looking at doing some playthroughs on YouTube. We actually have a few up right now that we've been working on, although the PS5 is kind of finicky when it comes to live recordings of content. It likes to clip things out apparently. Hmm. But we are messing with that. I am going to try to screw out the PC a little bit and get some Discord or whatever it may be going on there. Probably just audio commentary down the road. I don't intend on doing like full-blown face and video and green screen and all that. But our podcast, we do intend on going full video for YouTube at least, and then of course releasing audio segments on our, you know, normal podcast app locations.
Right. All right. Well, thanks then for joining the show, and you know, we'll definitely have you on in the future. Not because it's already recorded, but because we'll also record
another
more
one.
Episodes. Yeah. So I've got an icebreaker for you. I'm gonna see if I can hit you with a little bit of a different one. This one's awkward, and no one's enjoyed answering it, so I'm gonna continue to ask it until I'm satisfied enough. But what game character would you be friends with growing up if they were real? Even if they were like an animal or an alien or something like that, and that's okay. Like no rules at all on this. But what game character would you be friends with growing up?
Okay, trying to think about like my personality and some, you know what? I think I got you on this one too. But pronunciation wise, people are going to kill me because I pronounce it as Titus from Final Fantasy X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Titus factions out there, there is a thing. I do remember being like that, kid about this a few times. I forget which, I read it in some like outlet, I think it was maybe an EGM or something, but like they did have like a developer interview and they like phonetically wrote out like, oh, and it's actually pronounced Titus, as that's what I read anyway, but it's also, I've heard other versions too. So,
you know, I don't remember if they actually say his name in a video game either. And that's why there was all that controversy.
Yeah, no, you can name him actually. You still can custom name him. And so no player or no characters say his name. They should have just locked it in and allowed the voice actors to just say his name. Like, why does that matter? You know? But the, I think there is one scene where Waka actually does say his name, if I remember hearing that correctly. I don't remember off the top of my head, though. It's been forever since I've played that game. But
Kids with that whole controversy, we would joke around if other classmates say, oh, it's Titus, and somebody say it's Titus. Be like, all right, well, it's Yuna and Yuna. And like, so we would just screw around with people, just piss them off. But you know, I think his love of sports with Blitzball is, you know, something that kind of resonates with me. And as a character, he's, you know, he's got his emotions, but he's also trying to be a leader at the same time. So it's just somebody that I've always, it's one Final Fantasy that I've actually beat, I want to say 3 times. And it's the only Final Fantasy I've beat multiple times. So I just, and what's funny is it's not even my favorite Final Fantasy game. So I think just the game itself is great. And then the characters are just lovable characters.
Yeah, he was a great hero, I think, for sure. Like, I mean, coming from, like, my first Final Fantasy was 7, and I have gone back in time as well, but, like, it was, like, a bit of breath of fresh air to have, like, a hero who was, like, you know, optimistic and open-minded, and like, you know, he didn't have to be like the de facto leader. It was like this journey of like the group and like the companions of it all, you know. But there was just a different energy about him and the characters in that game, rather than like, you know, the brooding, almost silent, you know, Cloud. Though he wasn't completely silent. But same thing, like Squall also was a little bit of a moody, darker like character. And then Zidane, like, yes, he had some energy and everything, but he also had like a little bit of a, you know, the thievish and, you know, interesting past himself too. So it was just cool to have a good guy, you know, being like, you know, just a de facto good guy being your main character.
Yeah, and just and compassionate too, right? Like, that's just something that you didn't normally see of main characters. Just the compassion he had towards those that he was with, what was occurring with Yuna, how he wanted to, you know, just how he wanted to get back home, and all the emotions that were tied to Zendikar. Like, it was just, sorry, it's not Zendikar, it's Zendikar. What's the name again?
Zendikar. Oh, Zendikar's magic.
Zendikar's magic, yeah, the gathering. But you can see why I would mix those two up, just because they're so close. So it's been a while. Maybe I need to replay Final Fantasy X.
Mm-hmm. Fourth time's a charm.
Yeah, fourth time. Dude, I have maxed out that sphere grid. I can't tell you how many times.
Yeah, I love that sphere grid, too. It was cool. The only thing I think that I remember being slightly disappointed by was the, like, quote-unquote, like, no open world map. You were, like, you know, just traveling kind of zone to zone. And I just remember, like, thinking, like, oh, I want to, like, really feel like I'm exploring. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still, you know, it was still a really cool, really good adventure and really good RPG for sure.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, I kind of like the linearity of it. With that game, it kind of helped things flow a little bit better, and you didn't get lost too much. So growing up, that was kind of nice, but I did kind of miss that, you know, with Final Fantasy 7 and 8, and just how you could take the ship essentially and go wherever you wanted. That was always nice, or take your golden chocobo to wherever you wanted to. So that was always cool. But yeah, 10 definitely built that in. And then of course it was, I think, 13 that was like even more linear. That people were like, man, this is terrible.
Yeah I have friends who are defenders of it, and, you know, even played the sequels of it. And I mean, it's not like gameplay wise it's not a bad thing. I've never like wanted to say it was a bad game per se, but like the first numerous hours of the game, you are just essentially walking down a hallway, you know, a very beautiful and like really like nicely rendered like environment, but your pathway and your area that you can access is just essentially a hallway from just one point of entry to one point of exit. And you did that for so long in that game before, you know, apparently in the ending it did open up in some area. I never made it that far. It wasn't enough to kind of keep me hooked to it. But there's people who love those games, and they love them for a reason, I guess.
I haven't beat it yet. Haven't even messed with it. I beat, what is it, Final Fantasy 15, and enjoyed that. And I know a lot of people hate that game too. So, yeah, you know, it is what it is. Everybody has their taste in Final Fantasies.
Yeah. That's fun. We went off on a Final Fantasy tangent there. That's good.
All good.
Never bad time to talk about Final Fantasy. But let's get into the meat and potatoes of the episode. We will ask the main question here. We are going to talk about your console story. So what is your console story? I know before the show we talked about it. You've picked your console already, so you had time to think about it. But I'd love to hear about, you know, this, you know, this being, you know, potentially one of your favorite consoles, or you know, one that's very memorable for you. Tell me about, like, when you got it, what were some of the games that you had? What are some of the memories you had kind of tied up in it? Like, were there any special moments that you can remember with it? And maybe even, like, you know, it doesn't have to be a definitive top five, but what are, like, some five, you know, essential games you would recommend, I think, for sure, too. But let's get into it. What is your console story, and what's that console you picked?
So I picked PlayStation 2. And PlayStation 2 for me, I had several experiences that led me to my buying point. So at the time, I was playing PlayStation 1, was enjoying all the Final Fantasy games. So going back on that tangent a little bit, and that was really what it was for me. PS1 was a Final Fantasy machine, and RPGs in general. And we've talked about that on my podcast, too, with some of the great RPGs on that console. And, you know, with PS2, we had a... This is going to be a little bit of a long story, I guess. We had a neighbor that lived down the road from me, and same age as us. My brother and I would go over and hang out. And at some point, his stepdad bought him a PlayStation 2 and just tons and tons of games. And it was just one of those things that whenever we'd go over there, his stepdad would say, okay, you know, we're going to do work around the house. So we would help him out with like yard work and things like that. And then we would get to play PS2 all the time. So, you know, child labor in the early 2000s, I suppose. So that was really how we kind of got engaged with the PS2 to start. And so we would spend hours upon hours at that house playing Midnight Club, Dark Cloud. We'd play a little bit of, I think Crazy Taxi might have been on the console at that point. I don't remember. So number of games that we would play over at that house in particular. Oh, NFL 2K5, I think, was one that we would play as well. But lots of games. The guy had all of that. He had a Dreamcast, so we would play Dreamcast games. The PS2 was always the one that really stuck out to us. No GameCube, unfortunately, during that period, and no Xbox. The PS2 was the console that was decided on during that period of time. And so that's kind of how I fell in love with it. And then I was working, again, more child labor, right? So I was actually working with my dad, doing some, like, an external job and helping him with that. And I got enough money to the point where I could afford my own PlayStation 2. And so I went out and I got the red packaged Gran Turismo 3. So full-blown red box with Gran Turismo 3, red variant cover included in that. And that's how I got my first PlayStation 2. So with that console, it, of course, the backwards compatibility was a huge selling point for us. And we would just, you know, the first games we picked up were Midnight Club, of course, Dark Cloud. Those are big ones. And then as a sports fan, I had to pick up Madden games that were available to me, because at the time I was only playing, I want to say it was like NFL Game Day 98 or 97 at that point. So had to, of course, go to Madden, which I think was, was it 06? 03? I don't remember. It's been too long, man. But played a lot of Madden on that console too. And then we just started picking up things like Eco, for example. I got the official PlayStation magazine, so I get all of these demos coming into me on a frequent basis through that PlayStation magazine. So Eco is a big game that I learned about through that particular magazine. Final Fantasy X, of course, was heavily publicized at that point in time as like the next big thing, and the graphics were next gen and all that good stuff. Shadow of the Colossus was another one that I picked up at that point in time too. So that magazine actually fueled a lot of my future purchases, and I still have every copy of those magazines from my subscription years ago, along with all my demos. And it was just a lot of great things. Mr. Mosquito was one that we played back then. Obscure game for many, and not a very good game, but it's still a game. Silent Hill games 2, 3, and 4 were on that console. So for me, it was a lot of high-quality games, a lot of magazines coming in telling me that I should buy these games, and I just started amassing a collection.
That's rad. So was this, like, for you, like, this is the age that it was definitely, like, you making the soul-conscious decisions? It wasn't people just, like, buying you them for, as a kid, for, like, a birthday gift or a Christmas gift or something like that, that you were just, like, didn't have much input on? You were actively, in the driver's seat for controlling the content that you were getting for the PS2?
Yeah, for sure. So, and my parents were never really big on, hey, you can buy this. Like, it's only E-rated games, all that. Like, I was playing Mortal Kombat when I was 6 on the Super Nintendo. So we were doing fatalities and all that stuff when I was a kid, and, you know, trading the fatalities and codes and stuff at the on the school grounds. But we did play a lot more RPGs, and that's kind of where we shifted over time. So my parents weren't too concerned with that content. But with the PS2, to answer your question, yeah, it was really me in the driver's seat deciding what I wanted to play. If I had any sort of money coming in from a birthday or any sort of work I might have been doing during the summertime, Christmas money, all that good stuff, then yeah, you know, I would spend that money to buy what I wanted. I wasn't like super cost conscious when I was a kid, because, you know, as you're a kid, you get $50, you're like, I'm going to burn a hole in my pocket and buy the next big game. Whereas now it's like, I see a $60 game, like, I'll wait till it's $20. Right. So yeah, I was the deciding factor, and I can say that the first game that I actually purchased with my own money on the console was Chaos Legion, was essentially, fantastic game. But
Capcom published that one?
Capcom that published it, but it was pretty much like a Devil May Cry type game, like same style.
And I remember the cover.
I love the story. Yeah, Yeah, cool, cool cover art with like the red hair and everything. It just, you know how it was back then, man. Everybody was in the anime and DBZ and slicked back hair and pointy hair. So that's just how it went.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, the PS2, you saying this is like making me like drum up all my nostalgia for it as well. Like, I remember exactly when, like, you can believe it or not, October 26, 2000 was the release date for it. I don't have an open tab to confirm that, but I 100% believe me, that was the release date for it. It was an overcast day in Southern California where I was living at the time, and I had to go to school because I think it was a school day. But my brother, who was kind of already being a little bit of a delinquent and dropping out of school, I was like, you know, if you can do anything with your life, you'll go up to GameStop and pick up our pre-order, because there was a serious like shortage. Like, they cut like in half how many they expected to ship. They wanted to do a worldwide launch, but they ended up canceling that and did it Japan first. And then when it came to the US, it was like only like 500,000 systems were available day one. But I had one pre-ordered and it got home safe and sound, and couldn't get a game day one, so the first thing we were playing on that was Final Fantasy VIII, just continuing our save file on that PS2. But it was just rad to like look at the blue and green lights on the system. You know, it was powered on, it just looked like super high end and premium and everything, and just like that day one moment was just like, it was awesome.
I wasn't as fortunate to get mine as a day one moment. Obviously, the Gran Turismo 3 pack came out a little later in the life cycle of that console, but you know, I did have a lot of good experiences at friends' houses as well. I remember one of my cousin's cousin, as funny as that is, I would stay at his place, and he was a classmate of mine too, coincidentally. And we'd go over there and we'd play Tekken for hours and hours. We'd play some Bouncer as well. Mm. So it was always a lot of fun. Of course, Kingdom Hearts, everybody ended up getting a PlayStation 2 at that point. But I think it was in middle school at the time. So, you know, I had friends that were saving up their money too to get a console. We weren't about to ask our parents to throw down what was like $300 back then for
yeah.
that console.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite a bit.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I had some good times with that. We ended up getting what is the most obscure like accessory or weird thing you remember buying, like, you know, outside of gaming, you know, that was related to the PlayStation? If something comes to mind.
Oh, man.
I mean, because that was because the tail end of that system, like Guitar Hero started. So we had Guitar Hero 1 and 2. You know, you had plastic guitars, technically. I had the Final Fantasy 11 online, like, set. It came, like, in a big box with, like, a hard drive that you'd put for, you know, the big original PS2 systems and everything like that at all. And that was a really obscure purchase, you know, having to install the hard drive and install the game and play it online with a network adapter. But those are just kind of fun things.
Yeah, I bought the network adapter. That's one thing. I wouldn't say it was the most obscure item that I had purchased for that console. But you know what? I bought the iToy, but it was when I worked in a video game store that I got the iToy. And I don't even think I bought it. I think we just had a ton. I told the manager at the time, I was like, yeah, I'm going to take this home. And he was like, all right, cool. It was a mom and pop shop. So like, we had stuff that came in all the time. And it was like, hey, we're not going to sell that. You can take it home. So I got tons of cases and other things in the house that were just given to me. I would think the iToy is probably the most random thing that I could have purchased on that console.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's fun technology that, you know, Sony always is playing with something weird like that. And then the minute it didn't like smell like success, they would just abandon it cold turkey and move on to the next thing.
There were some really obscure memory cards too for both the PS1 and PS2, like ones that had buttons that you could click through to different slots. Like, that was kind of weird.
Yeah, I had one like that. It was like a 50-in-1 memory card, and you press the, you know, the little button on the screen to change the page, which was just changing to essentially a different memory card. And it was odd. I used to like enjoy looking at some of the obscure like third party accessories and third party things like then when I was younger. But as time went on, I think really probably when the more of like the PS3 kind of came out, it was like, no, I just want that official controller. I want it in like the standard stock color, you know, maybe a fancy color, but it would still be like the stock like style controller and official accessories and, you know, none of this third party stuff anymore. I kind of grew out of that.
Yeah. Same here. The small Mad Catz controllers and the GameCube and things. Yeah. I grew out of it as well.
Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah, that PS2. So do you think that's up there in your like top three like systems of all time, or it's just like the memories of kind of playing and having the official US PlayStation Magazine demos and just kind of experiencing that with like your friends and family and stuff? Is that just the nostalgia for it, or is it still rest kind of high overall, do you think, for you?
Oh, PS2 is by far like the most games I have in my collection. And I continue to buy PS2 games. I actually just bought one the other day for our podcast that we're going to be reviewing. So actually two games that I just bought recently. So I do have a love for PS2. It is one of my favorite consoles. I do think Super Nintendo might be favorite because there is a little more nostalgia in terms of like my first gaming console. I love Donkey Kong and Mario. So that kind of, you know, does kind of sway me in that direction. But so many fantastic games on the PlayStation 2. You actually asked me about potentially a top five if you had to get a PS2 and what are those top five games. I'd say Final Fantasy X would be on that list. You've got Eco, Dark Cloud. If you're going racing, Midnight Club is always a fantastic one. And then for that fifth one, Soul Reaver 2 always stands out to me if I have to think off the top of my head.
Interesting.
That was always a fun game growing up.
Yeah, that's cool. I was just at San Diego Comic Con and Dark Horse had this like Kane versus Azrael, it was like a statue, and I'm like why do they have this license? Like, what is like recently, you know, coming to light that's like, you know, they invest in this license for it? But I believe there's some type of remaster of Soul Reaver that's supposed to be coming out, but
they're remaking it actually.
Yeah,
I don't remember. I gotta look.
Yeah, it's something like that. So maybe that's why they grabbed it. But I thought it was kind of cool to see that. It just kind of caught my eye there while we were walking around. But rad. Yeah, thanks for sharing that story. Yeah, it gets me all feeling nostalgic for that PS2 life and you know, my memories of it. It's nice to hear about another Dark Cloud fan out there. I'm a huge Dark Cloud fan, and when the PS4 like PS2 classics thing came out, I replayed through it then and got the platinum trophy for it as well, and enjoyed playing it all over again.
I will tell you, every now and then I go on Google and look up Dark Cloud 3 just in hopes that something comes up.
Oh, yeah. Come on now. Come on, yeah. Sony. Give us what we came for. But all right. Thank you so much, John, for joining me on the show. I will have the links to like your podcast and like social media tags and all stuff. It'll be in the show notes for the show below so people can check you out. So y'all go out and search the Game Deflators if you want to hear more video game podcast. And you know, like you mentioned, it's fun to hear stuff when as they talk about like Magic the Gathering and like other like non-electronic games too. So if that catches your fancy, give them a subscription and follow along. But yeah, thanks again, John.
Yep, thanks for having me, Darren.
Bye. To another episode. It's been a while since we chatted.
Yeah, a long time.
It's
like
I need to shave a little bit.
Same to you.
From the last time I talked to you. I don't shave. I'm self-conscious, so the beard stays for life.
I was talking about downtown.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You're not wearing any pants, and your camera's pointed directly in your mid-read.
It's a lap cam for when I Twitch stream. I want players to know what inputs I'm pressing, so it's just accidentally okay. Down that way.
Sure. Okay.
I have every episode.
Can you adjust it up, though?
Every episode I've tagged as explicit for this podcast. Because I, just in case, you know, if we drop, you know, somebody drops an F-bomb, like, I don't want to have, like, any limits or anything. Nobody has. It's been completely clean, essentially, except for maybe some weird innuendo Thomas made one time.
You had the Westboro Baptist Church on last week, I thought.
That episode's not posted yet, though. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. But that one's also not going to be explicit there. I mean, there's good guys on both sides. Like, I don't know if you know this. Like, you know, they showed up and they're decent human beings on both sides here. So, like, being able to kind of hear their side, you know, I'm unbiased.
Okay.
I really, no, you know what? No, please make it clear. Not a fan, not an endorsee, not supporting, and not willing to, even humor talking to somebody who identifies as a member of the Westboro Baptist Church.
I don't know what you guys would talk about. I mean, it has to be video game related somehow still. So what would that, I mean, what would the...
Yo-noid.
They would be thankful the about NES the game. Censorship of the Castlevania games on old Nintendo platforms or something, maybe.
Yeah, removing all the holy books from all Nintendo titles.
Maybe that would be something.
Yeah. Okay, no Westboro, bad. They're not welcome on my podcast.
Wow, that's a bold stance. I commend you.
All right. I may just edit this part out.
Yeah, it's probably for the best.
just to keep it safe. I might leave the dick stuff in. Okay. It'll allow the explicit tag, but that conversation may be removed.
Okay. Sure.
All right. Well, welcome back to another episode, Austin. I'm going to ask, I don't think I've asked you this one. What is your favorite time period or setting for a game to take place in?
Oh, well,
last time we talked about, actually, I don't know what release order these will be edited into. So never mind. Yeah, never mind.
Okay. I think favorite for me is for sure going to be in the science fiction kind of realm. Mm. Definitely love anything kind of post-apocalyptic, anything kind of on the cyberpunk futuristic kind of a thing. That's cool. Just so science fiction in general.
It's weird, and you didn't like Cyberpunk or Fallout. Those are two franchises you're not a fan of. It's just kind of weird to hear. You like those settings, but you don't like Cyberpunk and you don't like Fallout. It's just kind of interesting.
Just kidding. Oh, you're just messing with me. Okay, yeah. Well, that would have been a good answer for another question, though. Fallout 4 didn't do a whole lot for me, but the series overall, big fan, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You already answered that question, though, so no going back.
I did. Never go back.
I mean, it might go back, you know. We'll go back to questions. You know, who knows? I have to. Okay. I can't make up new questions for every single episode. You know, eventually they're going to get re-asked later. Okay, sci-fi. That's something that I kind of would consider myself the same way. Like, I do play. Like, I think if I had to pick a genre, like RPGs, and specifically like Japanese developed, like, you know, like old school RPGs. Like, for whatever reason, like, that's probably my favorite genre of games, but. Science fiction, like, settings and things like that are, like, definitely the ones that I think I'm most interested in and drawn to. There's not a lot of, like, RPGs like that necessarily, but, like, the Mass Effects of the world and things like that. I mean, like, Fallout's as well, you know, with their, I guess that's more post-apocalyptic than science fiction-y, but, you know, it could be written as some, like, Twilight Zone-y science fiction. Yeah, it's interesting. I like the answer.
Yeah, I'd like to. I mean, there's, yeah, the fantasy sort of setting gets used a lot in games still, and then science fiction does too. But it just still feels like they could better distribute some of the options that are available.
Yeah,
you know,
The Phantasy Star games from Sega were originally like science fiction, like tied and like spacefaring and space travel, and also had. Like female lead characters as well, so they were like really like those early entries, like 1 and 2, like were like kind of genre defying and still like out of the norm for like that entire genre, because like, again, it's all like so, like fantasy and medieval like inspired settings and all stuff, which I also have famously said, this is, you know, known around the world, but I don't really like that fantasy bullshit. But I put up with it, like, and it doesn't bother me at all in most like RPGs, which is just really weird. I think it's the gameplay. I just think the idea of just, you know, turn-based battles and, you know, just looking up for all the nooks and crannies to, like, you know, level myself up and equip myself better. Like, I just like that gameplay loop for whatever reason. Yeah. All right. Well, I thought that one might stump you a little bit thinking about it, but you had an answer ready to go. For this episode, though, we're going to ask... this is kind of more... I mean, this will involve some follow-up questions and me kind of like picking your brain a little bit to hear more about it, but what is your console story? And so the console you wanted to speak about is the Super Nintendo. So what is your Super Nintendo story? Like, tell me a little bit about, like, you know, when you got it, some of the memories you have of it, some favorite games and stuff, but I'll probably just kind of like probe a little further and go along just kind of here as you chat about it, but... Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'll just say, like, the first, I guess one of the reasons that I chose this one is because, okay, I guess, like, when you're an adult getting a console on day one, still super exciting, but it's a little bit different. You know, you're going to the store yourself, kind of just, you know, buying it, picking up whatever you want to go with it. So there's not maybe that, like, surprise factor that, you know. And then I remember when me and my brother Thomas, we saved up from, like, working and bought a GameCube. But also couldn't get a game at the time. So we just had the console for the first, like, few weeks, which is not a very exciting thing to happen.
And how did you save up that money?
We were working in the cantaloupe fields of Arizona. Yeah.
And how old were you?
I was 15, so Thomas must have been, or I think, yeah, I was probably 15 or, I was 15 or 14, I think. So Thomas was, you know, up to two years younger at the time.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. Under the table, cash payments, summertime cantaloupe field working. Got your GameCube. Yeah, no game.
It sucked not being able to get a game, though. And then it didn't come with any kind of a demo disc or anything either, you know? So it was just sort of like, okay, well, this looks cool. I can't do anything with it. But, so, and then, you know, we got a Nintendo 64, which was really cool, too. But the Super Nintendo I wanted to go with, because I guess when you ask a question like this, the first thing I think of is like that, like, launch day or like the first day that you get it. Mm-hmm. So that's why I bring those other ones up. But I remember being, I guess from like my earliest memories of a kid just playing like old Atari games, old NES games, or I mean, I guess they weren't that old, but, in, you know, NES games we had. So I had two older brothers, so those were already kind of like in the household. So I remember playing like a lot of NES games and being a big fan of like Mario and Zelda and, you know, all sorts of games. And so then when the Super Nintendo came out, I was probably 6 years old, I want to say. And so it was that Christmas I remember unboxing it and getting like, you know, Super Nintendo. And I don't know. I think I was so young. I don't think I was like fully aware that there was like another, like a better thing that had came out. So it was just like, it was like a mind blown kind of moment. Like, oh man, I've been loving this, you know, Nintendo for so long. Or since like my whole concept of time, since I've existed basically.
Yeah, my entire life for these
Nintendo games.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you know, it's like a huge catalog of games that like, you know, old people have amassed. So you're playing, you've got such a variety of playthrough. But so, yeah, I just remember unboxing that thing and being like, whoa, Super Nintendo, you know, and there's like a Mario game on it, you know, and he's like riding a dinosaur and just like looking at the box and being just completely blown away, like, holy crap. And obviously it came boxed in with Super Mario World. So that was like, you know, within, you know, a few minutes of unwrapping our gifts and stuff, like getting that, having our dad like hook that up so we could just immediately start playing. And yeah, that was one of those like, you don't even really want to play with any of your other toys. You just want to play like Super Nintendo, like 8-10 hours a day, you know, and you're young enough where there's not really, and it's like Christmas break anyway, but there's like no school. And then when you do get back, I just remember like getting back to school. And like, as soon as I got home, just wanted to keep playing Super Nintendo, Mario World. And, Thomas, he might've been in like preschool or something, but he would get to be home like the whole day with it, able to like keep playing and stuff like that. And I just remember kind of being jealous of that even. So just like that day one memory just sticks with me. It's just like the most like I said, I guess just being so young, not even really knowing that there was like a follow-up console. I'd like never would have that kind of like level of surprise again with a game console, because obviously you get older and you get really into the hobby and read the magazines and whatever.
Well, yeah, but so. I think that's the thing that it did. Like it turned you on, like, so like, you know, focused on like loving this and like whatever it was that you experienced, just like, you know, brought this like joy and like entertainment and just attachment to it, that then you just became like, oh, I want to absorb and like be involved with as much as I can. Like you know, reading Nintendo Powers and old video game magazines at an early age. Like I remember me and you were like probably some of the few kids probably on the playground, like, you know, talking about video game magazines, like what's coming soon, like the rumor mill and like all these things. Like other kids were just like, oh no, like my mom will show up sometimes randomly with a new game from the store. Like, I don't even know what it is. I don't even ask for it. She just picks it out. Like, what do you mean? Like, there's, you guys know about these things in advance? This doesn't make any sense. Like the other world that people could live in, like, when that's the case, it's just kind of weird. But there's, like, that enlightening when you first kind of, like, fall in love with it. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and it's also crazy to think that people that were even vaguely into video games could exist that way, because, or at least maybe it's a financial thing. Because thinking about it, like, how many games a year were you really going to get, right? You got, like, maybe you can get a birthday, yeah. Christmas.
Yeah, that's probably
sibling, it. Maybe you can get on the same page and hopefully pick out one for their birthday and Christmas gifts as well. So, you're looking at, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 games a year if you're lucky, you know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. That's a high number, I think, you know.
So, my point with that, though, is, like, you better make those ones count, right? Yeah. You don't want to get some lemon in there. You better, like, do some research, figure out what's the good...
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, that's true.
You're looking, like, upcoming game would be, get check the reviews, you know, that kind of stuff. But
I don't want to end up with some dud. I don't want to, you know, get, you know, Pirates Legends of the Dark Water, you know, some licensed cartoon, like a platformer. No.
And this is off topic. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, knowing that how much we read, you know, maybe this was just a little bit before we became, like, completely fully as knowledgeable as we could be, but how did we end up getting Superman 64?
We rented
that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Would you be renting it? Yeah. I could have sworn it was a purchase, like a Thomas birthday gift or something.
No. I think that was a Blockbuster or Hollywood Video type rental situation.
Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah,
because we didn't play it, like, obviously, I guess even if we did own it and it was somebody's gift, like, we wouldn't play it much after that first, like, kind of afternoon planning because of just how bad it was. But yeah, we didn't, like, ever go back to it just like, all right, fine, let's just see if we can just get through this, or, like, kind of try again type of thing. Like, it just wasn't played and discussed ever after that, because it was definitely, like, I remember that being, like, a rental for sure.
That makes some sense then.
Yeah. Interesting. Like, that is the idea of getting it when it was new to you and, like, being, like, first, exposed and introduced to it and everything. Like, that's, you know, like, obviously that's a big thing. And then getting Super Mario World, like, that changes everything. Like, you know, imagine if it was, you know, Tasmania or something like that. Like, all right, cool, this is kind of fun. Like, yeah.
Right, having, like, that built-in, like, you know, whatever, 9, 10 out of 10 type game in the box just ready to go was awesome.
It's a 10 out of 10, you know.
It's a 10 out of 10 for me, for sure, but... But so then, yeah, what was really cool about that console, I think, though, was that, like, most every Nintendo game that I can think of was, like, took things, I think, to the appropriate, like, kind of, like, next-gen sort of level. Like, obviously, Mario World was in different ways, a massive upgrade over, like, Mario Brothers 3. I think Link to the Past was, like, a huge upgrade over the previous Zelda games on the NES. Super Metroid was the same thing, like Donkey Kong, like all the Nintendo first party games, I think, were just like hitting, like just knocking it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
But then it kind of got me into like other genres that I hadn't really played as much. Like that was my first, well, no, I probably played in the arcade, but like having like a Street Fighter 2 able to, you know, play at home and stuff like that. I wasn't really ever, you know, as a little kid, especially on like the NES, like playing a lot of like fighting games. So that was cool. Probably didn't really play a lot of the Japanese RPGs until like after the fact.
Yeah.
But obviously that was a console that had a lot of those on there. Sports games I just got more into. I played like NBA Jam, NBA Live, like ABC's Monday Night
That's
Football.
Right. Didn't have the license to the NFL, but did have the license to ABC's Monday Night Football branding. So great football game.
Yeah.
Just minus none of the players you knew or loved.
Frank Gifford on the call.
That'll be a safety.
The names of the characters were all just Japanese, like the developers' names, maybe, or mostly, you know, sort of like Ken Fugamaki or something like that, or, you know.
So random.
But fun game. I mean, you know, or I had fun memories of it. Even like fishing games, played some of those on there. So it was like, in terms of genres, I think it opened me up to a lot of and I think my age also had something to do with it. I was getting older and getting more probably just into video games in general and more willing to try out different genres and stuff. So that was an influential console for me for sure.
Yeah, I never had a Super NES, and I think I got one when Nicole and I started dating. I think she had one, and then we kind of just compiled our stuff together, but – we didn't really play it much, and then ended up being sold off and stuff like that. But I did love the Game Boy Advance, and so much of that success comes from like being able to like port in amazing SNES games and then like continue like games that felt of that caliber and all that stuff. But when I went to one of the earliest times I went to your house, maybe even like the first time I ever went to your house, and like we like first started becoming friends, I'm bringing up Final Fight, but like that was like one of the games that we played. That was the first time I ever played Final Fight. I never played it in the arcades or anything like that at all whatsoever. But just like the beat 'em up like genre and all that stuff, it wasn't just like a one and done like flashy arcade thing that was like just over if you got hit once or anything like that at all. It was like there was more gameplay there than like games I had been used to and everything. And yeah, that was my first exposure to that, was playing that SNES version and everything too. And so now to this day, that's, you know, how many years is that? 30 years plus later. You know, I'm working on a book project about it and all that stuff, digging up, you know, these good memories and everything too. And that comes from that Super NES port of that Final Fight that y'all had there. I think I had my Genesis at that time, but
oh yeah,
it's definitely one of those moments where it was like, I have this and I play this a lot. I don't want to keep playing this. I want to play what you've got over there. And you're like, no, 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 no. Yeah. These are boring. Like, you've got this thing over there. Like, let's try this out.
Yeah, because that was the same for me going over to your house to play Genesis, where I really hadn't played, you know, any of those games, you know.
Yeah, yeah. The Super Nintendo, though, famously introduced I don't know if they introduced it, but the L and R buttons, so like having shoulder buttons on a controller, like they evolved the NES controller's like two button interface to four face buttons and two shoulder buttons. Like the Genesis controller didn't have shoulder buttons or anything, so that was one of those things like dexterity wise and like teaching and training like kids to like level up their like input methods is also kind of crazy, because right now, like, you can think if you're like a younger gamer and you put that control on your hand, you can kind of figure it out. Like you can get adjusted to it kind of, you know, somewhat quicker. The NES was probably a lot faster. You pick it up and understand, cool, these are my only two options. I got it. So like you scaled up with that. And if you try and throw like a PS5 controller in some 5-year-old's hand right now, they're like, oh, do I use like the gyroscope? Like, what's this little touch panel thing? Do I have to use like all four of these like shoulder buttons? Do I click in the sticks for extra buttons? Like it's just a lot to like overwhelm somebody, and that potentially turns people off in games and all that stuff. But like Nintendo had this really like smart evolution there, I think, by just having the shoulder buttons. And then what they would do next is an analog stick, you know, on their next system, you know? So they were constantly leveling up gamers, I think, to like be prepared for modern games, as they then scaled it back and started waggling around and everything. But, you know, you got to start somewhere before you go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But cool. True. So what are, but this is a longer conversation. That's okay. I think I knew that was going to happen, but what are some of your kind of like favorite memories of some of the games that you played, or maybe just some favorite games in general? Like if you had like not necessarily a top five, but what are five standout ones in your brain that are just like classic SNES ones? I know you've mentioned a few already.
I for sure have. I mean, I'll go like Mario World. The second one's also really good, but the first one probably more nostalgia factor for me. A Link to the Past. Super Metroid, still one of my favorite games of all time. That holds up. That's still a really good game. Mm-hmm. Give me one of the Donkey Kong countries. I don't really care which one. Those are good, fun, somewhat difficult platformers.
Diddy's Conquest?
Or Diddy's Conquest? Dixie's.
It is Diddy's Conquest, but I think people want to read that as Diddy Kong's Quest. Like Diddy Kong's Quest, but it's a pun on Diddy's Conquest. Those Brits.
And then, I don't know, there's so many, Super Castlevania, that's a really good, fun Castlevania game. God, I don't know, there's probably something I'm forgetting. But one memory that stands out, I remember when it was me and both of our brothers playing Link to the Past, like trying to get through that for the first time. And, you know, no internet, no strategy guide. We got through it, but I just remember that being a little bit of a few sections that being grueling in terms of figuring out like what we were supposed to do next. I remember being stuck forever after you defeat like a boss, and then you just have to like cut the curtains behind the guy so you can like continue on where you're supposed to go. But we were like so stumped for some reason that we'd like go you know, completely arbitrary parts of the map and just pore over, like, okay, did we miss anything here? You know, which doesn't follow the formula of those games at all. So I don't know why we would have thought that. But
yeah.
I remember that being like a really challenging and fun. And really having a way to find out any information except maybe ask other kids who it didn't seem like knew and maybe just made up some things about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, to get to the top of Death Mountain, you just use the hook shot. You just, you know, just hook it up and then it just goes up there.
Yeah. It's like, where did we get it? It's like, I don't remember, but I know you like hook shot up the mountain. And, yeah.
Liar. You're a liar is what you are, child.
Yeah.
Cool. Well,
SimCity on Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah,
I remember
yeah.
That was like my first time being able to play SimCity.
It was like a specialized version of it too. That was more than just resource management. You had like the characterization of that Mr. Mayor or whatever his name was. I remember that name of the guy with the funky hair.
Wasn't it just like Will Wright? I think.
Was it supposed to be Will Wright in the game? Oh, I thought it was like some Nintendo like character type of thing.
I think they did a conglomerate of like he was named after like Miyamoto and Will Wright, I think, somehow, if I'm remembering correctly. Like a mashup of something.
I'll have to go check
that out.
And
then it also had it had Bowser in there as a disaster option, I think, if I remember right.
Yes. Yeah, he's one of the disaster options.
I think that was developed by Nintendo.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was not just like some port of the exact same.
But that was another like that's got to be in the top 10 probably for me of Super Nintendo games. And it exposed me to those like simulation type games. Like I said, that was a console that really got me into some different types of genres, which is cool.
Yeah, interesting. All right. Well, thanks for chatting. I think that'll kind of wrap that there. The SNES. If anybody else has love of that SNES, share some of your thoughts or memories and all that stuff. Wait, is there comments on podcasts? No, there's not. You can say something in social media then. At Darren Hefke or at, you know, whatever. Yeah, yeah, that's it. It's not really a talk back thing. Go to my Patreon page and just leave a comment there. All right. Have a good one, Austin.
All right, thanks.